Welcome to this week's Key Voices.
I'm Caroline Doherty, bringing you a roundup of the latest education news and an interview with our special guest, Matthew Purvis, Ofsted's Deputy Director for Schools. This interview will be broadcast in two parts, so tune in next week for the second half of our conversation. In the news this week, Ofsted has confirmed off-rolling schools are likely to be judged inadequate under the new framework. This is despite controversy this week when it judged an off-rolling school to be good. Ofsted has published three school inspection reports which have identified off-rolling in recent months. Schools Week has reported that the government will be taken to the High Court over its cuts to special educational needs funding after a judge ruled in favour of a landmark judicial review. Families of pupils with SEND crowdfunded the legal challenge against Education Secretary Damien Hines and Chancellor Philip Hammond. A judge ruled the case will be heard in June. The Department for Education is working with major companies to bring careers education to all primary schools, but there is no information yet as to when this will be rolled out. Research shows that 4% of primary schools currently don't provide any careers education to pupils. Also this week, according to The Independent, a record number of children miss out on first choice school places. Some 115,000 pupils in England will not be offered a place at their preferred option, according to analysis by the Good Schools Guide, which warned some parts of the country simply do not have enough places to satisfy local demand. The TES has reported that teachers work more unpaid overtime than any other sector. The Trades Unions Congress, which carried out the research, said that that amounts to 9 million hours of free labour a week, or 462 million hours a year. The Guardian has reported that the Shadow Culture Secretary has warned of book poverty as pupils celebrate World Book Day. Research commissioned by the Labour Party shows that the number of books borrowed from libraries fell by 38% between 2011 and 2018. And Ofqual has stated that exam stress isn't necessarily a bad thing and has launched a series of blogs for teachers on supporting pupils who are anxious about tests. For our full news briefing, please visit key.sc/news. And now on to our interview series. This week we're speaking to Matthew Purvis. Hello, Matthew, Ofsted's Deputy Director for Schools.
Hi, Caroline. Thanks so much for having me here today.
Great. Well, if you'd like to start by setting out briefly what you'd like to talk to us about in this interview.
Fantastic. And look, before I do, Caroline, I just want to apologise if my voice cracks at any stage. I think my big life lesson this weekend is have kids get germs. So if that goes, I am so sorry. So on the 16th of January, Caroline, we launched our consultation on the new Education Inspection Framework 2019. And that consultation runs all the way through to the 5th of April. And I know you've got lots of questions to ask me about that today, but if I wanted to summarise what it's all about, I'd say it's about taking the focus of inspection back to the real substance of education, to the curriculum. Mm-hmm. So our observation is that over the last two decades, standards have risen in schools, and that's because of the work of leaders and teachers and children and young people, and that's fantastic. But sometimes with our accountability system, we become so focused on the data about what's happening rather than the actual education that's taking place, that's taken our focus away from what really matters. And so we have the new education inspection framework with the quality of education judgment at the heart of it. And really, the point of that judgment is to no longer have an outcomes conversation in one place and a teaching conversation in another, but just to have a single educational conversation that flows from what is it that you want children to learn? How does that translate into classroom practice? How's that curriculum passed on through teaching? And then how does that flow into the standards that children achieve? So it's having it all in one place, and hopefully that'll be a much better experience for schools. And our inspectors are certainly telling us it enables them to get much more under the skin of what's going on in any given school that they visit.
Great. So earlier this year, we asked our members for questions. If they could ask someone in Ofsted a question about the new framework, what would it be? We've taken those answers and summarised them, and we're going to ask you those questions now. So just to kick off, thinking about the changes to the framework and the practical differences that will make, how long do you think it's going to take to actually fully embed the new framework? And you're expecting there to be a sort of transition period between the old and new. Mm. Could you give us an example of what it might look like in practice for a school that actually has its Ofsted in September?
Okay, that's a really good question. So thank you to those who've sent it in. I mean, reflecting on this, Ofsted's been thinking about the curriculum really hard for the last 18 months. That's been the main focus of our inspector training throughout that period. And it's that process of having an ongoing enriched conversation about the curriculum, what it's for, how it translates into reality, that our inspectors are ready to go out and have that conversation in schools. Mm-hmm. So we don't expect schools to, close the doors in the middle of July, open the doors on the 1st of September and have a radically different approach to the way they see the world. We recognize that thinking about the curriculum really hard and translating that into what it needs to be is a process. And thinking about the curriculum is thinking about not just what's the exam syllabus, mm-hmm. but what do I want my children and young people to learn?
Yeah.
So what are the endpoints that I want them to get to? And once I know that, what are the key concepts that they need to understand in order to build their understanding to get there? And then crucially, what order do they need to learn that in? Because actually, the way that our brains work, we connect what we know to what we know already. You never just drop an idea into the vacuum. It always builds on what you know already. So what's the order in which we're teaching things? So we're hoping that schools are already thinking like that. But we've been really clear in the handbook that certainly for the first year, if we come across schools that are in the process of thinking all of that through and building that up, we won't expect them to have the full answer yet. We'll observe that they're going through that process and report favorably on that. Because it's so important to us that we don't scare everyone into jumping up in the air and landing where they will. We want to prompt a really rich conversation about what it is that our kids should be learning.
Great. Thank you. Again, on the practicality side of things, some members were worried that if they're in that inspection window, that they'll actually need to be on site or very near to school at all times so that they can be on hand to meet with an inspector. And what would you say to that person who's worried about that?
Okay. Well, I'd say you don't need to be. So our view in Ofsted, and we try our hardest to back this up, is don't prepare for inspection and don't do anything strange that you wouldn't normally do because you anticipate inspection. Mm-hmm. But I guess this question comes from our suggestion that inspectors prepare on site for inspection. And the idea that actually instead of calling at lunchtime the day before inspection, we'd call earlier in the morning the day before inspection. And then inspectors would carry out their normal preparation but do it on site at the school rather than at home and then travel overnight. It's fair to say that's had a mixed reception out there. What I want to say is, you know, the reason we've suggested that is because we want inspection preparation and inspection to be as collaborative an experience as possible.
Yeah.
So rather than a few phone calls back and forward and then the inspector turns up 8 o'clock the next day, actually sitting down on site and, you know, the head coming in and out as they will and doing some of that preparation together. But in reality, the inspector's got a whole lot of their own preparation to do. So actually the inspector needs to sit there and do it. So we don't expect the head to be there all the time. It's just about creating the opportunity for those conversations. And as I say, people kind of responding online on the survey have tended to be worried about that. We've piloted it in a lot of cases. And actually heads tell us, I was a bit funny about it before you came and did it, but actually the experience of doing it was much better than the offsite remote preparation.
Interesting.
So look, we're listening through this consultation. You know, we only consult on issues we're willing to make a change on.
Yeah.
But we really think there's a good story to tell here and we hope people will see that.
That's interesting. Thank you. So on to data. You mentioned in your introduction that, you know, that's been too much the focus of conversations around Ofsted.
Yeah.
And you said that inspectors are not going to be looking at internal data, which has, you know, great implications for workload. But does that not kind of raise the stakes around external data? And, you know, we've heard things in the education press about people trying to game tests. Does that not just raise the stakes around your external data?
Yeah, okay. Again, that's a really good question. So no, I don't think it raises the stakes around external data. external data already has some pretty high stakes around it. And what we've said is that inspectors will not look at internal progress or attainment data. Let's turn that into a practical inspection scenario. So Caroline, I come in to inspect your school. It's actually been about 18 months since the kids sat their exams for which the published data is available.
Yeah.
And lots of things have happened in the school since then. Mm-hmm. And you say, look, Matthew, things have changed. Actually, we've had a bit of trouble here in history, but things have really improved in maths and in these situations. And I'd say to you, okay, well, how do you know that? Mm-hmm. And you have a range of ways of knowing that. One of them might be your internal data. That's fine. Yeah. Tell me about that. Tell me that story. What we shouldn't be doing then is you slapping the lever arch file on the table and us kind of yomping through pages and pages of spreadsheets. Mm. And I see that happening too many times in inspection.
Yeah.
And the truth is, for me to verify the validity and reliability of that data would take the full 2 days of inspection. Mm. It's not an inspection activity.
Yeah.
So instead you say, well, I know this from my data and I know this from my other sources. I then need to take that on trust as your assessment of where the school is.
Mm.
And the job of the inspector is then to go out and say, right, let's show me. Let's go and see that in practice, in reality, on the ground. So the point here is not that data can't inform the conversation. The point is you use your data how you like, but there's no data you need to produce for Ofsted.
Mm.
You tell me what's going on in your school and we'll go and see it firsthand.
Okay. And so if a school did have a high number of SEND or EAL students, and they might want inspectors to look more closely at that internal data as part of that story, and that would be fine then, would it?
Almost. So we know that in that situation, published data is next to useless because there's very little comparison you can do across the SEN cohort. But what I wouldn't want is for inspectors to be sitting looking at the data about those children, particularly if we're talking in a special school where there's probably fewer pupils. We'd want to be going out seeing what's happening to these children based on your understanding. Your data is there to help you understand it. But if that's the only tool you're using to work out what's going on, that probably doesn't represent the reality of your practice.
Yeah.
So actually, if you want to use data, then don't come on site for inspection. Mm. We've got performance tables. Inspection is about getting a first-hand account of what is going on and balancing some of that data rather than reinforcing it.
Thank you. That's really helpful. Thank you very much for listening. Key Voices is produced by The Key, giving education leaders the knowledge to act. Special thanks to Matthew Purvis for talking to us today and to Ofsted for hosting. Remember to listen to us next week for more from Matthew on the changes to the Ofsted framework. Members of the Key for School Leaders can access hundreds of articles on the latest issues in education at thekeysupport.com.